Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education. My name is Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. Our website is insideed.com, where you can listen to or download podcasts of all previous Inside Education programmes. On this week's programme, I speak to Professor Lisa Delpit, who is the author of a book on education that has sold over 250,000 copies in the United States, Other People's Children. Her latest book is called Multiplication is for White People, Raising Expectations for Other People's Children. She has received the award for an outstanding contribution to education from Harvard University School of Education, and she is currently the Felton C. Clark Professor of Education at Southern University in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Usually, when I meet guests, I begin asking the questions, but Lisa Delpit was having none of that. She began by asking me some questions.
Hi, Sean. I was just wondering, I know that my work is known in the U.S. with people of color here, particularly, or about people of color, but I'm curious, why are you coming from Ireland interested in this work?
Well, I suppose, Lisa, there's a few reasons. First of all, I know how much expertise you have gained in this whole area, and particularly among African American and students, other students of colour in the United States. And I was interested to find out what lessons could we in Ireland take from your work in order to see how it could apply to students who are minority students or who face other obstacles in their learning in Ireland.
Okay. Well, just first of all, tell me, I'm curious, who are the minority students in Ireland?
Okay, there's three groups in particular that I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about a group, probably the group that is maybe there the longest is a group called the Traveller Children, Travelling Community. And they are people who would traditionally have lived in caravans or tents on the side of the road. But more recently, more and more of them have settled and have moved into houses or have moved into various serviced sites, but still they want to, many of them want to retain their ethnic identity. So that would be one group that certainly underachieves in Irish schools, and they often leave school early and so on. Another group that I'm thinking about is students who are battling poverty and who come from homes where there have been generations of poverty and where they experience many disadvantages. And the third group then that I'm thinking about are people who migrated to Ireland in the last 10 to 15 years in particular, because we did have a successful economy for a number of years, and that led to a number of people, some of whom are students of colour, so they would have come from Africa, to a lesser extent from Asia, but also there would be students who migrated from Eastern Europe and whose first language would not be English. So they're the groups that I'm thinking about in particular.
Okay.
So I suppose if I start asking you some of the questions then.
Okay.
I suppose my first thing is, when you talk about an urban classroom, what do you mean by it?
Yeah, typically what folk mean is some kind of inner city, low income. Usually when folk use that term, they're referring to children of color. But typically it's children from families that are economically disadvantaged.
What can a teacher do to create excellence in a classroom that is that has a number of students who might be considered disadvantaged in the classroom?
Let me just say that some of it is at the classroom level, and some of it is at the school level. So the school needs to make a commitment to say that we are going to focus on and do what we need to do for these children who we understand come with knowledge that may not be that which is typically understood to be school-based knowledge. Many children from low-income homes, all children from all homes, come to school with a wealth of knowledge. Sometimes that knowledge is about school-related topics, and sometimes that knowledge is about life-related topics. typically low-income children have more knowledge about life-related issues and less knowledge about that which is expected in school. So one of the things that I've said is that teachers and schools need to understand that we almost have to turn the notion of basic skills upside down, where what we consider basic skills in school are those skills that middle-class families teach their children at home. And what we consider advanced skills are in being able to evaluate, interpret, higher level thinking. And frequently, children from poor communities come with those kinds of skills, but they aren't noticed in school because the only thing the school is concerned about is what they consider basic skills, and then assume that the children are less intelligent because they may not come with that without ever seeing the strengths that they do have. Does that make sense?
Well, I suppose I'm wondering, how do children from poor and low-income households, how do they develop these higher order skills of evaluation and so on?
Because they need them to live. A child, for example, who is from a low-income community that might have more crime, for example, they have to be able to interpret every situation that they're in. They need to be able to be safe. And to be safe, they have to look at the setting and determine what people or what situations might be less safe. Middle-class children seldom have to do that. As a matter of fact, there's so many programs to try to teach middle-class children how to be safe because they're not in a setting where they have to learn it. The other thing is that many times low-income kids have to take care of younger siblings. And so they have to learn the kinds of, to be able to determine what needs to be done in, they have to have adult-like perception of what needs to be done in situations where younger siblings may be in danger or may need to be cared for in ways, again, that middle-class kids who are often much more infantilized don't have. Some of the examples that I've used in the past are, I had a student when I was teaching in Alaska, and she was actually from, a graduate student, she was actually from the Midwest in the U.S., and she had taught for a good while in the villages of Alaska, where there's great poverty and Alaska Native children are there. And she, when she then came to teach in the city, and she was, her students were more middle-class kids from, usually from white families. And she came to me in utter frustration saying, "These kids, the middle-class kids, don't know how to do anything. They can't even tie their shoes," which of course, she was teaching kindergarten. And people think that's fine in middle-class homes for kids in kindergarten not to be able to tie their shoes. For kids in settings of poverty, they need to know how to tie their shoes and a lot of other things. She said that she found that when she was teaching in the bush, in the rural areas, the villages, the kids sort of took over the classroom in the sense that she could work with a small group. The other kids would arrange the materials, and if paint spilled on the floor, one of them would just clean it up, and they would keep the classroom running so she could work with groups of children. She said in the more middle-class setting, everybody wanted her attention. She couldn't work with a group of students because if paint spilled on the floor, several kids are going to be standing around looking at it and crying rather than cleaning it up. So it's those kinds of things that unless you spend time with within the communities that you may not understand that kids from low-income families actually are bringing a lot more than you might know if the only thing you're assessing is numbers and letters.
You see, a paradox that I hear in what you're saying is that schools want to develop these higher order skills and they're trying to promote them, say, in middle class children, but they're not noticing them in children from poorer backgrounds. But if they're trying to develop them and some children in the class have them, why is that not being picked up on?
Well, they don't try to develop them because in general, I guess, as I mentioned, middle-class children in schools and at homes are infantilized. So they're not really thinking that this is something that children can or should be able to do until they're maybe third grade. So they're not even looking for it until much later. And that is one reason. That's one of the reasons why they don't notice it. A second reason they don't notice it is that they have a bias already about what low-income students bring. So it's much harder because of that bias to see strengths. They only see deficits.
And speaking of deficits, you see strengths in what children from low-income backgrounds bring to the classroom. But teachers will often say, oh, well, they don't behave well in the classroom, or they, you know, maybe they're seeing violence at home, and rather than developing these higher order skills, they're actually reproducing some of the violence in the classroom. What would you say to that objection?
You know, I was in Hungary not too long ago, talking about the Romani children there with some groups of people, and I heard some people talk about the violence that the kids expressed to each other. And so I asked them to describe it for me. And what they described was kids who talked loudly and would, you know, kind of shove each other as they were doing things. And then there happened to be a Romani person there, and I asked, would you consider that violence? And the person said, no, that's just how we are. So some of the things that are interpreted by middle-class eyes as being violent, we need to double-check to see how that is interpreted within the community in which it's happening. That's one piece. A second piece is there may be some things that, there are lots of things that are okay in homes, middle-class or otherwise, that may need to be adjusted when you are in a situation with 25 people in one small room, because in nobody's home are there 25 people of the same age in one small room. So the teacher would need to create or help the students to create systems and routines and discussions about what culture we're trying to create within this classroom. And I find kids respond to that. If they're not, I mean, what often happens though is the teachers don't discuss it. They just see this behavior and say, these children are violent and they don't know how to act in school and et cetera, et cetera. And they get referred, at least in the US, to special education classrooms for behavior disordered children or whatever. As opposed to having this conversation, which these kids are very able to have about what kinds of settings are we going to produce here in this classroom as our family, and relating it as a family too. That's another thing that's usually an important piece with certainly with children of color and with many low income kids, to say we are a family here and we have to create the kinds of settings that make our family work together.
And are you saying that teachers often don't do that, are not explicit in the kind of expectations that they have in trying to create this family?
Absolutely, because they're assuming that everybody frequently is coming from the same. They're perceiving that the kids are acting against rules when the rules have never been made, discussed and made explicit. So yes, in their head is these kids are purposely creating violent and turmoil in my classroom without them having ever had the opportunity to engage with the kids in a discussion about what we want to create as a group.
So that reminds me of the title of one of your books, which is Other People's Children. Is that the idea that you're getting at there about the disconnect between the teacher and the backgrounds of some of the children in their classes.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly it. That's one of the pieces of what that means. What the title meant is that we are teaching other people's children and we need to understand it. The other part of that is, how do we view other people's children? I mean, there are sometimes when my child was young and we would have kids come to spend the night, I know that I was much more concerned about the welfare of the children who were spending the night because I was responsible for their well-being. And so that's another way to think about other people's children, too. We have to be even more careful than we might be with our own.
We've talked a little bit about what teachers can do to support these learners in the classroom. What about the school as a whole? What can be done there at that level in order to support the children in achieving excellence?
Well, one of the big issues, I don't know about in Ireland again, but certainly in the US, is all the teachers say the kids won't do their homework. And the low-income children of color won't do their homework. And so they just continue to mark them down and complain that the parents don't care and the kids won't do their homework. So it's, you know, okay, you know that's the problem, and there's nothing you can do to control what goes on at children's homes. Let's see what we can do as a school to change what might happen here. So what I've seen some schools do is to create a time when older children can come in and help tutor younger children to do their homework, or that we can just create opportunities within the school day for kids to with assistance to do what it is they need. And I think, you know, rather than whenever you find yourself complaining about the same thing over and over again, that should be a cue that maybe I need to do something different, or we need to do something different as a school to address this, because our complaining has not made a bit of difference.
And if we move on then to the policy making level, are there things that, say, a Minister for Education and Skills, as we would have in Ireland, or I suppose maybe the equivalent here would be a district superintendent, what can they do in order to support all learners to achieve excellence?
Well, I think they need to recognize the fact that all children, that children may have different needs based on their backgrounds, and that they need to create opportunities for schools to differentiate what goes on in the school for those children. They may need smaller classes, for example. They may need the best teachers, as opposed to what happens in the U.S. when they get essentially the worst teachers, but they get frequently teachers from an organization called Teach for America, where teachers have, 5 weeks of training as opposed to 4 years.
I want to actually take you up on one point there, Lisa, and that is, you talked about having smaller class sizes, and that's something that traditionally we have tried to do for the kind of students we're talking about, in particular, you know, students from low incomes and so on. And it's a policy that's currently being reversed in some instances, or at least to some degree, for economic reasons. And I'm just wondering, how can smaller classes make a difference for students of colour or students of who come from poverty, from low income backgrounds?
Well, they need more assistance. They may need more help learning the school-based knowledge. If we understand that kids from middle class homes sometimes often come to school with the skills that the teachers think they are teaching. With my own child, I know the teachers thought that they taught her to read, and I know that I did. So I think smaller class sizes give, and you mentioned the idea of there may be some kids who are acting out for various reasons. If you have one child like that, then it's a lot, in a class of 12, 15, then it's very different than having five in a class of 30 or something.
And How would a teacher teach differently, though, in a smaller class? Like, what I'm wondering about is, if a teacher has a smaller class, but they teach as if it's still a big class,
right,
that doesn't solve the problem.
Right, you're absolutely right. They would need to focus on more intimate relationships with the children. They need to understand more about what the children bring. They need to understand, they need to work in smaller groups. They need to spend a lot of time getting additional help for their kids. And they may need to use different materials. And those materials may be more personalized than they would be in a class where kids already bring a lot of the skills that they're trying to teach.
You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programs can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website, insideed.com. My guest today is Professor Lisa Delpit from Southern University in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I next ask Lisa about the fact that immigrants to Ireland in the last decade or so tend to be disproportionately represented in some schools. Could we be creating pockets of segregation that could be problematic in the future?
That would be hard to answer without really spending some time in the country to see the schools and to see how this is being viewed. I mean, it sounds like the issue is one as well of how integrated the adults become into the larger community in terms of their jobs and the ability to acquire housing, as to what will happen with the schools and segregation. But a piece that I think is really important to keep in mind, and I mentioned this in Hungary too, is that it is extremely important to understand that diversity is a gift for children, for middle-class white children. And if we are trying to create global citizens, they will function, middle-class white children will function in the world a lot better if they have the opportunity to spend time with people who are not like themselves. Because those are the people who are going to, the people who have that kind of opportunity are the people who are going to be, even to be able to have jobs that are going to require understanding of larger numbers of people.
But why don't the parents then see that? Because very often what happens is that as the school becomes more segregated, parents who are middle class and who can afford to move their children somewhere else won't send their children to that school.
Well, maybe you need to interview them. But they obviously perceive, they don't perceive it as a gift. And the country, this country, doesn't either perceive it as a gift. And it's a message that I'm continuing to try to push. There was a study just recently done. Matter of fact, it was just aired 2 days ago on Anderson Cooper about kids on race, was the name of it. And one of the things that they saw was that kids in middle-class white kids in segregated settings have little or no understanding about the notion of different people of different colors being able to interact and live happily together, and that their parents, one of the examples was a 13-year-old white girl saw a picture of a white girl on the floor in a hallway with her book scattered about and a black girl standing behind her. And the white girl's response to this was she pushed her and knocked her down. And then they reversed the picture where there's a black girl on the floor with her books down and a white girl standing up. And her response was, oh, she, the white girl in the picture, is going to help her pick up her book. She must have tripped. And that kind of thing, where the same scenario, just with the race changed, was very common for white children in segregated settings. And they interviewed the parents, and the parents were shocked that this is what their kids believed. And it just, I believe, goes, one thing it certainly shows us is that you don't have to say words of prejudice to your children. Just the fact that you have them in these settings and the messages that the country gives or the society gives over and over creates that. So I believe, you know, I've always wanted my child to be in diverse settings, and I believe it has suited her well.
How important, Lisa, is it to recruit minority teachers for working with all children, and particularly for children from minority groups like we've been talking about?
Well, one of the things that I have a young teacher colleague who is wanting to work on a book about why Black kids need Black teachers and why white teachers need Black teachers. And I think the latter is even more important. I believe that children need a diverse group of teachers in order to be able to feel that people who look like themselves can be in positions of power, also to have people who understand the backgrounds that they may come from. But I think white teachers also need Black colleagues to be able to share and understand some issues that they might not otherwise. And the same with all minority groups, that the more diverse our faculties are, the more resources we have as teachers to be able to understand what might be going on with our students and our community that we teach in.
Your new book is called Multiplication is for White People, Raising Expectations for Other People's Children. What are the key messages in that book?
Well, first I better say where the title came from, which was a child saying to her tutor, a Black child saying to her tutor, "Why are you trying to teach me to multiply, Miss L? Black people add and subtract. Black people don't multiply. White people multiply." And of course, it's a situation that no one has said this to this child ever. You can rest assured no one has ever said this. But somehow this child has internalized this message. And so a lot of the book is about the kinds of internalized messages, not only that our students get, but that our whole society gets about the ability of African-American children and children of color. So the book takes a look at some of the counters to that assumption, but also shows how that those assumptions play out in both lowered expectations and lowered achievement of African-American children.
Lisa, thank you very much for talking to me.
Well, thank you, Sean, for talking with me as well. It's been a delight, and I'm glad to think about these issues in other national settings. It's important for me to have that opportunity too. Thanks a lot.
And that was Professor Lisa Delpit from Southern University speaking to me at the annual meeting of the American Educational Research Association. That's all we have time for on this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programs on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email us at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to my guest, Professor Lisa Delpit. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.